We're doing Berkei Avot with Rabbeinu Yonah. We were up to the second Mishnah. We had said, Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, says, Yafetemu Torahim Derech Eretz. Torah is nice with Derech Eretz, with work. Sheyad Shnehem Ashkacha Atavon. Because if one toils at both of them, so then he makes sin scarce. V'chol Torah She'enimam Mehalacha, and any Torah that is not accompanied with work, ultimately that Torah doesn't last, and on the contrary, it drags with it sin. And we're up to the final part of the Mishnah, and all who deal with the masses, they should do it for the sake of heavens. That way the merits of the forefathers assist them and their righteousness is eternal. And God considers it as though you did it all yourself and you'll get great wages. So what's it talking about? So sentence one, whoever deals with the masses should do it for the sake of heavens. Lo litkabed, not for the sake of honor. Velo leinot mehem, and not to benefit from the masses. Velo listarer alem, nor to rule over them. Ela lanigem bederech yesharav hakol Hashem shamayim. One has to lead when he is leading with one intent. I'm doing it for the sake of heaven. Not easy. Holy Rabbi lived a century ago. His name was that, Deret. He was Rav Kook's father-in-law. And he wrote an autobiography. He basically wrote his own memoirs. And you read his works, you see a very holy person. And then suddenly you read his own personal memoirs, and you read about how he had challenges. He writes about how you walk into the room and everyone stands up and it's hard not to let that affect you. So it's very honest, brutally honest. But there's an aspect where it's very hard. So all who deal with the masses, we're getting this warning from Rabbi Gamliel, who himself was a prince. His father was the prince, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. And he tells us, don't do it for the sake of honor. Don't do it for the sake of benefit. Don't do it for the sake of power, but do it so that you guide people in a right path for the sake of heaven.
But can you enjoy those things when you get them? Let's say you don't do it for the sake of honor or the sake of power, but when you do get an honor, can you enjoy the honor, or is that already something that can be detrimental to your, let's say, to your original goal?
I don't know. I would be tempted to say you shouldn't do it even for a blend, even for a partial benefit. But the Rambam doesn't seem to agree with me. And I would be going against the Rambam, because the Rambam in his introduction to Pirkei Avot, or to Mishnah, the Rambam writes, in his introduction to the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin, neither. In his introduction to the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin, the Rambam writes that even sages need this aspect, this drive to feel like, I'm going to get something out of it. So the Rambam seems to say that there is a blend, meaning we know that the worst type of leader is one who's focused on putting other people down. He should be up, they should be down, he should have power. And about him, the Talmud says he'd be better off if his placenta overturned. I mean, he'd be better off having been a miscarriage, not having been born. If a leader whose sole focus is on power, even a Torah leader. In Chazal, we're talking about someone who learns Torah, and his central focus is to be able to tell other people, you got that wrong, now you got to do this different. So about him, the Gemara says, Nach lo shelo nivra. He'd have been better off not being created. But then you have a blend. You have people who are doing it for the sake of heaven, but they also enjoy it. And that that we would think that's not right, and yet the Rambam says that that's as high as we can attain. The Rambam says even Tanoim couldn't do better than that. So I don't know what to say. I don't know. I know what the Rambam says, but I don't know what the Rabbeinu Yonah would hold. I don't know if Rabbeinu Yonah agrees with the Rambam on that. He doesn't tell me. He says, don't do it for this, don't do it for that. So Avraham's asking, what if I do it for both? I do it for the sake of heaven, but I actually do enjoy the honor, etc.
You don't do it for the honor, but once you get the honor, it doesn't give you a bad feeling.
But isn't this similar to the concept that we understood of being born under a certain constellation, like Mars has like an effect on blood? I would assume that some people have the natural disposition to lead. And therefore, if they're using that for the benefit, but focusing on God, then I think that might be what you're on.
Yeah, his question is, can you enjoy it? I would tend to say yes, even though I have no clue from the Rabbeinu Yonah what he would hold. There's a story in the Talmud Tractate Tanis. The Talmud tells us about Choni HaMe'agel, that there was a great sage named Choni. He pondered, what does the verse mean in Shir HaMalos, Hayinu Kecholmim, that the 70 years of exile passed like a dream. Can a person really dream for 70 years? And then God showed him. He fell asleep and slept for 70 years. A tree grew over him. No one knew where he was. They said, oh, MIA, missing in action. And 70 years later, he woke up. It says, before he went to sleep, he saw a person planting a tree, a carob tree. He asked the old man, will you benefit from the tree? He said, no. So he said, why are you planting? He said, my parents planted for me. I'm planting for future generations. And then Choni fell asleep. 70 years later, he wakes up and he sees the tree and he sees someone picking fruit off the tree. And he says, did you plant this tree? So the guy says, me? Heck no. Not even my father. My grandfather planted the tree. So Choni understands, okay, a lot of years have passed, right? He goes back home. He asks, is Choni here? Is Choni's family here? And they say, well, his grandson's here. He goes to the academy and they're learning Torah. And all the questions they have, he has answers. You know, he's from a previous generation. He knows it all. So by the end of the day, people are saying, hey, this is what they say it was like when Choni HaMe'agel was around. They say that he used to answer all the questions. So he says, hey, I'm Choni. So he said, you're a quack. He's answering all the questions all day. And then by the end of the day, he says, I'm Choni. And no one believes him. So he says, I'm never going to be accepted as Choni. And as much as he tries connecting with those learning Torah, he feels like they're never going to realize who he is. And he says, God, I want to die. O chavruta o mituta. Either I can connect with people, either people can understand who I am, either they treat me like who I am, or I can't live in this world. And Rav Herschel Schachter says that Gemara teaches us that there's a certain amount of honor that every person needs and is entitled to. And when a person doesn't get that, he has a hard time living in the world. Choni HaMe'agel, the giant of Torah, but when the whole academy can benefit from him, but not appreciate that he's really Choni, and then he feels like, oh, so I'm not, you know, I'm just never going to connect with them. They're never going to connect with me. And Rav Herschel Schachter, really, what he says seems to be pshat in the Gemara, that they didn't honor him the way Choni was entitled to. So he says, from there we see there's a certain amount that's legitimate, that's part of human dignity. So that's food for thought. I would just add one word of caution. As we age, things change in our personality. Many of us are still younger. What happens as we age is that we become more sensitive to our own honor. This concept that we just learned is a dangerous concept, especially as a person ages. The younger we are, the less we care. You know, even if we care, it's not to the sensitivity or to the degree of someone who's older. As you start getting older and you've experienced more of life, So what starts happening is a person becomes more and more refined and more sensitive to even small nuances. And if a person doesn't hold that in check, then a person can become one of those grumpy old men, because it's a natural development of the human being. And that as a person ages, they tend to really take their own honor much, much more seriously. It means much more to them. Did my son call me to wish me good Shabbos? Did my grandson call me? I came to the room. Did the grandchildren come over to tell me hello? The honor becomes more important to a person as they age. And that's where I say, if you're going to remember this class, which I hope you will, be careful not to take it too far. Because it can really backfire on a person. Yeah?
You said last, is, they say, as far as I know, it seems it's the last drive, you know, for lust, for money, honor. They say the last one to leave you, you know. There's a sense of that. Because we all know our great-great-grandchildren won't remember our name. We are great-great-great-great, for sure not, right? So if you have this building, the Fleischhof, right, the building, the yeshiva, or this and that, there's something about that, that people, you know, my life amounted to something that's transcendental in this world, I think that people have. Now, you can get over it. I mean, I think what Hazal seemed to be saying there is most people don't, and if you're going to give your tzedakah and do your good deeds with a little bit of enjoying the fact that it's named after you or this and that, that's okay. But if you're at the level where you can do something anonymously, or you're at the level where you don't have to, and that, and you don't need that joy to feel the connection with the transcendental, all the better, seems to me. Seems it's making a concession for the human personality. And as you said, the warning, don't let that wipe you out, because it sure can. You could be a grumpy old man and worse. Yeah. Cut off your grandchildren or whatever. Yeah, I think. I don't know, I just put my thought.
Yeah, but coming back to Rabbeinu Yonah, I don't know from his wording, I don't know if I could understand either way. He says, don't do it for A or B or C. He doesn't address the question you asked. Let's try to finish the Mishnah. So do it for the sake of heaven. Even though you're helping the masses, you see it as though through your toils, the masses get what they need. But you have to realize it's not you who's really doing it. The merits of the congregation, that's what's really helping. For thousands of generations, the merits of the forefathers are supportive. And so even though a person can work super hard to benefit the masses, he has to have an appreciation that the masses have merits too. Even if you look at the masses and you say, what merits do they have? So their fathers have merits and their forefathers have merits, because it lasts 1,000 generations. The Mishnah concludes and says, even though we just said it's the merits of the forefathers that really push forth the success with the masses, atem ha'oskim, nonetheless, those who are working to help the masses, ma'aleh ani alechem kilu na'aseh kol tzorcheihem al yedeichem uvizchutchem. I consider it, God says, as though you did it on your own. Yeah, we just said, be careful that you should realize there's a lot of help from the merits of the forefathers. Nonetheless, God says, I'll consider it as though you did it on your own without any help. So don't worry, you'll get ample payback for it. Kach pirush harishonim zal. This is how the earlier commentaries explained this Mishnah. And there's one more interpretation to the Mishnah. Should we do that or leave that for next week? We'll leave that for next week? What? We'll leave it for next week? Yeah? No? Should we do it now?
Let's do it now.
Okay, we'll do it now.
V'yesh lefaresh
od pirush acher. Rabbein Yonah says, there's another interpretation in this whole Mishnah. Those who deal with the masses should do it for the sake of heaven. Don't say, why do I need this pain in the neck to deal and carry the toils of the masses? it's a pain in the neck. Mm. Once you're dealing with the masses, it's a pain in the neck. Person lives a private life. It's comfortable. You go where you want. You do what you want. You don't have to worry about too much. You start dealing with the masses. Take an example of a doctor. Right? So, everywhere he goes, people ask him questions. He comes to a simcha. Hey, I just want to ask you. He tries to go out with his wife. His beeper goes off. He's driving down the road. He sees an accident. He has to stop and help. There's a tremendous toil, a tremendous burden that's sitting on him because he's helping the masses. If he's real about it, so he's helping the masses. I have a friend who said, yeah, that's why I became a skin doctor. Not too many emergencies in skin doctor. He said, you know, I do this, I do that. So people sometimes opt out. They say, why should I have that pain in the neck? So very often there's real room to fret. Do I want this? I have friends who are married to nurses. And you have to be a big tzaddik for that. Because very often on a Friday night, they eat the meal alone. Their wife is out in the hospital. Very often they have to put the kids to bed alone. It takes two to tango. Every time you see a nurse, there's a whole system behind that nurse in the hospital. On Yom Kippur. What kind of davening is her husband having? Who's taking care of the kids? Who's dealing with the house? I'm not even talking about the idea that she's on her feet working throughout the fast day. So there are many areas where if a person is dealing with the masses, it's difficult. And there's room to say, what do I need this for?
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Congregation,
Rabbi,
in particular.
Yeah, but I purposely gave a different example.
Yeah, I think it's a good example, obviously, too.
I'm saying...
Even more so, it's how you conduct yourself in public.
Oh, so that I didn't. That's why I didn't want to go the course of rabbis, because there, it's a totally different. It's a different burden. It's on a different level.
It's the other plus.
Right. It's different.
Also, not with your family whenever you feel like it. You want to be. The wife has extra burden.
I mean, look at any politician. The most minor detail that they do can be easily scrutinized by everyone, and judgments made accordingly.
The rabbi is worse because the politician, it's not a Hillul Hashem. When the rabbi does it, unfortunately, he represents Hashem.
It's very hard. You know, yeah.
It's in all the little details, let's say. If my underpants are like not well, and I just put it back, like as rabbi, if they are, maybe I'm in public, people see me. Like.
Yeah.
Thank God there's the other side, though. The opportunity to kedusha Hashem and reach a lot of people positively is also greater than
right. But a person can say, "What do I need this for?"
Absolutely, I'm sure people say both.
She'en echa lachshov davar ze, ki kiflayim tetiv la'atzmecha ba'avuram, mimnei shezchut avotam mesayetan v'tatzlech maasehem, masher tuchal latzlech b'maasecha. Person might say, okay, so I'll do charity, but more than that, why should I bother with this? So he says, no, you have to know that you yourself will benefit tenfold because the merits of the forefathers will help you. You will see more success than you could imagine. You will succeed more than you would have succeeded in your own life. Because the merits of the masses, now the masses need you, so their merits help you in your life too. Umale ani alecha sachar kilu asit ota mishalcha et hakol, ukeilu mikischa natate et asher natnu al yadcha. A person would think, you know, if I'm collecting money for charity, I'm helping a cause, so what do I need this pain in the neck for? You know, it's a big pain in the neck, because I once had... we were collecting for a family where someone was very ill and the government didn't cover much of the medication. And we posted signs all around the neighborhood. And what happens is people work according to their convenience, not your convenience. So I'm on the way out to shul Friday. I'm going to be on time to shul, hopefully. But you know, on time means you don't have a spare 2 minutes. And suddenly there's a knock on the door and a guy says, you know, I figured on my way to shul, I'll drop off a donation. Now I suddenly have a bunch of cash in my hand. I got to deal with it. I got to put it somewhere so that I don't get it confused with my money. Now how am I going to get to shul on time? It's very nice that he wanted to stop by on his way. What about me? You tell yourself, wait a second, what am I getting out of this? They're all doing their mitzvahs, and I'm their servant, right? I'm serving them. So that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. You might think to yourself, even though I'm helping them do the tzedakah, but what do I get out of it, even from a spiritual sense? No. You should know there's a special assistance from above when you work to help the masses do what's right. And God says, I consider it as though you laid out all the money. Even though you collected it, you were a facilitator. You didn't actually lay out the money. That's what the Mishnah says, the second pshat. V'atem aleh aneh alechem sachar bekilu asitem, as if you took all that money out of your own pocket. V'incham marviach betochachav ma'asehem, asher titach la'atzmecha. And so when you work to get that, to help people, help others, so then I consider it as though you did it yourself. Ki ma'asehem merubim mima'asecha, and you'll accomplish more than you could have done on your own, because working through the masses, you can get more than you could have done on your own. And you'll have a special assistance from above. The merits of their forefathers will help you too in helping them. And that's why a person who works with the masses, if his heart is focused on the sake of heaven, so then he will benefit greatly. It's in his own interest. But that's how Rabbeinu Yonah, according to the second pshat, says, focus for the sake of heaven, because then the merits of the masses, their forefathers' merits even, will help you. That righteousness will be considered all as though you accomplished it and God gives you a special assistance from above. And this is something which is a very, very important concept. Let's take an example. 2 years ago, we had class. We had a class. After class, one of the guys comes over and says, you know, I'm not sure what to learn. I'm going into the army. So I was rushing. I didn't really have time. He says, yeah, but I'm going into the army. I really need the time. So I turned my schedule upside down and we took 15, 20 minutes, we sat down and we set up a learning schedule. And he went to the army and I went on with life and totally forgot about the conversation. About a half a year ago, I get an invitation to see him. He finished all of Tanakh. You know, so 2 years ago, we sat for 20 minutes. I didn't think much of it. You know, you move forward. You take the time, you talk, you move on. You don't realize how those 20 minutes are now going to develop, you know, to hours and hours of accomplishment. I'm saying there's one of the benefits of working with the masses is that you can really bring about tremendous change. You can, by if you're willing to talk to people, if you're willing to work with people, so then you can facilitate much more than you could do on your own. We set up, also about 2 years ago, we set up a Chavrusa program, where we started learning small things, learn 3-4 minutes a night, and we set up a Google document where people could sign up and find Chavrusas by phone or in person, and people started pairing up and learning. And I forgot about it. We set it up. And again, I suddenly get an invitation for a Siyum, and I suddenly realize, hey, every night these guys have been learning. I forgot about it completely. We set it up. I move on with my life, but they moved on with their life learning. So there's a tremendous benefit. We sometimes want to do a lot on our own. And a person who works on his own is limited. A person who's willing to delegate, to let other things ride forward without him, so that person is almost limitless. It's one of the keys in chesed as well. It's one of the keys to accomplishing a lot. If you can delegate, and whenever you delegate, it will not turn out the way you want it. Very often you notice the times it turns out less good, But you have to realize that there are many times that it turns out better. It's not the way you would have done it. And so you automatically feel like, I wouldn't have done it that way. But that doesn't mean it isn't better. It's different. And that's why to us it feels less good. That doesn't mean it's not better. About a year ago, there was a young rabbi who asked me if he could give the Friday night speech. So he wanted to practice. So I figured it's harmless. You know, the congregation will get a Dvar Torah, different style. It's good for him. It's good for them. And then I get a night off, fine. So we introduced him. I went and sat with the congregation. I listened to his speech. He's speaking, and I know he wants my feedback. So I'm listening, and I'm listening with a very critical ear. Like, would I have said this way? Would I have said this that way? And he finishes his whole speech, and I'm thinking, that was so simplistic. He could have added a story, and then it would have been more interesting. He could have added a few examples, and it would have been more alive. He basically said one idea. He could have said two or three, and he didn't even elaborate enough on that idea. He could have made it into a big deal. I was quiet. I didn't say anything. I gave him a big yishar koach. I told him it was great. And I decided I want to think it through before I say anything. It's always easy to be critical. Let me think about it. And when he finished his speech, I even felt bad that I allowed him to do it, because I said to myself, I wasted the congregation's time. I would have told him four Divrei Torah in that time. He said only one. I literally felt bad. And afterwards, I heard people talking, and I suddenly realized I should be learning from him, because the congregation was able to grasp what he said better. Because he kept it very simple, he kept it down to one idea. Whenever I talk, I try to give 5, 10, as much as I can. You guys see it in the Parsha class too. Like short attention span. Let's cover this. I'm saying, yeah, but different is better for some people. That means he was able to touch people I wouldn't have touched. So at first glance, I said to myself, how am I going to present this thing gently? Like, I was thinking, you know, I had so much to say because I would have done it so differently. And I said, you're not saying anything. I said to myself, wait, think it through. Who said you're right? And then I realized, I'm wrong. This is my style and it's right for some people, but I'm missing people. There are people that he was able to touch with that style that I never touched. So that's not less good. That's just different. And it might even be better. It's for sure better for some people. So I'm just saying, when we delegate, very often the first thing we notice is, this isn't the way I would do it, which we immediately translate to mean, this is less good. That's the way we feel. There's a reason why we do it the way we do. But very often it just means we have to be more open to seeing that there are benefits to doing it the other way. And if we're willing to delegate, then we can accomplish almost without limits. Almost without limits. And one of the reasons that people don't accomplish is they're bogged down. They don't delegate. And you'll have a lot of frustrations when you delegate. A lot of problems. And very often you'll tell yourself, I shouldn't have done that. But you should. There's no other way to work. You have to delegate, and you'll deal with the problems. But you got to delegate. And then you can accomplish a lot. And that's where he says over here, with working with the masses, you can accomplish so much more than if you were doing it on your own. It won't be 100% the way you want.